It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is your host, Amanda Teagarden, in studio with my co-host, Don Wyatt.
Delighted to be here. We have a warm, humid climate in the heartland today, don't we?
It is. It's Oklahoma in August.
There you go.
It's August in Oklahoma, let me put it that way.
We were due.
We were due. It's hot. We did get some rain, though.
That's true. The rain has helped a lot. I had the privilege of flying over the area up at Claremore and Pryor up in that area, and it is really green. It looks really, really good from the air.
You mowing your grass more often?
don't make me go there. Uh-huh. I hire that done, and they come and they mow every time it quits raining, I think.
It's necessary. We have a hired slave. It's our son. He's taking care of all that. We're from OK Safe, and the website is ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. We have a couple of other websites as well for your interest in education. First one is exposinghealthcarereform.com, about exposing healthcare reform, the truth about what we call, what the public calls Obamacare. And the third one is still in the development process, but there's good information there, and it's stopsmartmetersinoklahoma.org. So we have two .coms and one .org. And Don, you've got a couple of websites you're associated with, or organizations?
Exactly. The Tulsa912Project.com is the website for the Tulsa 912 Project, surprisingly enough. And an outgrowth of that was a website that I drive called boondoggleblog.com. If you want to see information about the egregious misspending of public monies that's primarily local, but there's also some national stuff covered in there too. It's an interesting website.
Is there much to talk about?
There's too that's much to talk about. Yeah. It's like trying to take a sip of water from a fire hydrant. I mean, the material is unending.
Well, that's a good way to put it. Now, Tulsa 912 is hosting a public forum on Common Core state standards, which is a very controversial issue. Many states are opposing the adoption of the Common Core state standards.
Correct.
And tell us about when that is.
That'll be this coming Saturday, August the 10th. It'll be here in the Tulsa area. There's information about how to sign up for it. It's a nominal $10 fee. It's an all-day Saturday conference. We have arranged, we believe, the best collection of speakers on this subject that has ever been put together in the country. There are a lot of other Common Core conferences being held around the country right now, particularly in Florida and some other states, but they usually tend to just show one side of the issue and usually only for an hour or two. This will be an all-day conference with speakers on representing both the Common Core supporting and Common Core opposing forces, and I think it's going to be splendid. The kickoff speaker is our Superintendent of Education, Dr. Janet Barisi, and we have a lot of other really excellent speakers.
Don't you have Oklahoma Wesleyan President?
We do. Dr.
University
C.
President.
Everett Piper. Yep, he will be there. This is really a wonderful opportunity to get hold of the real issues and learn for yourself what you believe about this. The venue will hold about 350, maybe 400 people, and we're expecting it to probably be sold out.
All right, so you can find information on Tulsa912Project.com, Tulsa912, spelled the numbers, 912project.com.
Right. No punctuation or anything.
And it will
912.
Be, let's see, it's at Spirit Life Church, if you're
That's
just listening
correct,
for this, on Peoria, 53rd, 54th in Peoria,
right,
in Tulsa, Oklahoma,
right,
on Saturday, August 10th, 2013. So it's good to attend. And make sure you stop by the OK Safe table, because we've got a booth at this event, and we'll probably be asking questions as well.
Oh, yeah, and there will be some more booths. One of the things we've deliberately organized is the opportunity for audience questions. And I think that'll be as important a part of the program as anything else. Dr. Barisi, for example, will speak for about 45 minutes and then take 45 minutes of questions. And I bet that's more questions than the Tulsa community has had the opportunity to ask during her entire tenure in office so far.
Well, now this is being held at a church, so don't bring the Rotten Tomatoes and all that kind of stuff. You bring your best behavior.
That's right.
But bring your pointed questions, because there are a lot of questions to be answered on this.
Let's be grown-ups, but the
grown-ups
issues...
Grown-ups throw tomatoes,
That's true. The issues are critical to our next and subsequent generations.
They are, and you can get a lot of good information on ROPE, Restoring Oklahoma Public Education. If you just go to that, Jenny White's the president, and she, along with several ladies, have done great research on what's wrong with Common Core curriculum state standards.
Right.
All right, Don, we've got a great guest today.
We do. I'm excited.
And it's an in-studio guest, which we get every once in a while. We're delighted to have him here. And the title of today's show is Micro-Secession. We're taking it right from the title of his book. He's an author of a book. His name is Jonathan Bartlett. The title of his book is Micro-Secession, Simple Ways to Liberate Yourself, Your Family, and Your Community from Government Idiocy. Oh, I love that title.
I do too.
Our guest, Jonathan Bartlett, will be discussing his book. And Don, as the reach and scope of government has increased over the last several decades, we haven't seen that. Yes, we have.
You bet we have.
We've seen a corresponding diminishment in our rights to life, liberty, and property.
That's right.
As this nation's... We can add to this the cultural decline, which has been evident in my lifetime.
Spiritual decline as well.
Oh, it's just amazing. Watch TV, the old television shows, and then flip the channel back to what's on television today.
That's true.
And then turn off the television. We also have out-of-control debt. It is evident our country is failing before our very eyes. The passage of the Unaffordable Care Act has made this even more evident, and most of us are trying to figure out how to extract ourselves from this system of things. Today's guest has a few common sense suggestions. Welcome, Jonathan Bartlett.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. This is an honor to be here.
We're delighted you're here.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to write this book, Micro-Secession?
Well, I consider myself just kind of an average guy. I'm a computer programmer by trade, and kind of like everyone else, I realize that there's a lot of stuff going on. And so over the past few years, I've been asking myself the question, what can I do as an individual? Because, you know, we've had times when we've had Republicans in office. We've had times when the Republicans have had the House. We've had times when we've had the Republicans have the House and the Senate.
That's right.
But we're still going in the wrong direction.
Yep.
And so I finally decided we can still work towards it, but there may not be a time when they do the right thing. And so what is it that we can do? I mean, are we just stuck? Or is there something that we can do for ourselves while we're here? And so that is a... So I spent several years just, you know, trying to look in my family and see, you know, what it is that we can do. And then at the beginning of this year, I just really felt I needed to share. I'm still learning this myself. But I thought that it was something that I really needed to share with other people, is just kind of, why is this important and how can we get started? Because everyone's frustrated, but no one knows what to do.
It is a challenge. In fact, I'm increasingly hearing from grassroots leaders that the problem is in Washington and it can't be fixed by Washington. We're hearing that theme often, and we're looking at ways to try to address some sort of protection or micro-secession at the state level, and more importantly, at the individual and community level.
Yeah, and it's, like I said in my book, it's, you know, micro-secession is different from political secession. The goal is not to form separate entities. It's kind of like if you were married to a drunk. You know, you shouldn't get a divorce, but you shouldn't ride with them in the car.
That's a good description.
Yeah, and so so the book is a way of how do you separate yourself so that the stupid things that they're doing at the national level doesn't hurt you and your community.
Right.
Well, there are things that they're doing, the stupid things that they're doing at the state level that is furthering or advancing.
That's true.
The
too.
Stupidity, if you want to call it that,
yep.
From our federal government, we're doing, we're in the throes of this massive reinvention of government to fulfill the global economy's demands and the end of nation states. We're going through a wrenching transformation, which was warned or predicted as all these changes were taking place. And cultural changes are part of this wrenching transformation. But on seceding, now we're, you know, seceding, the definition of seceding is to withdraw formally from membership in an organization, association, or alliance. It could be from a political alliance, a church, or an organization. Secession, with a capital S, often refers to when the 11 states seceded from the Union prior to the beginning of the Civil War. So the word secession has yes, that's a good way to put it, dramatic connotations to it. And so you're not talking about seceding from the Union, which is, you know, that's one of the key points that's been talked about.
Some people are.
There are. That would be, I think, almost impossible to do. But there are ways. We've been talking about it amongst ourselves. OKSA's been talking about it. And they keep coming back. And it's like there's got to be an alternative system where we extract ourselves and stop participating in this system that's going to crash.
Right.
So what is micro-secession? You've got a definition here. It says about removing yourself from the out-of-control systems that have trapped the country in a downward spiral. Discuss, let's start into, you have several chapters in your book, and let's start discussing the first one, seceding from the money economy.
Yeah,
what is that?
I think, you know, you mentioned that, you know, secession is a formal withdrawal. And I think, you know, the most important one that we can do that's not necessarily political is withdrawing from the economy. And in fact, that's both more and less radical than seceding politically. The problem is that the currency is being controlled by central banks, and there's a possibility that a central bank could do a good job with currency. It's just not historically, it's never really happened, and in our case, it's going downhill fast. I don't know if your viewers don't know.
Listeners, we're on a radio.
That's true.
There you go.
Yes, if your listeners,
they don't want to see us right now.
I've got a face made for radio and a voice made for print media, I think.
And it's hot.
The central bank is actually printing $85 billion a month.
Per month.
Yeah,
that's right.
And
they've been doing that for a while now.
Since mid 2012.
Those are,
I think,
jobs. I'm sorry.
That's right.
It's like, yeah, let's produce drones. Those are jobs.
And a friend of mine gave me a good analogy for money, and that is, we tend to think of money as a thing, but we really need to think of money as a concept. And, you know, money is it's something that's a placeholder for work that we've done.
That's right.
And so when someone just prints money, what they're doing is that they're making everyone's work less valuable.
Correct.
And so when they print $85 billion a month, that's how much they're devaluing the way that you work every month. Right. And so I try to emphasize ways that you can, you know, we can't get all the way away from the money economy. We still have to pay taxes. There's things that you have to buy with cash. But there's a lot that you can at least stop being addicted to money. And one of the ways to do that, We tend to think that all of the value is in monetary assets. We try to have a 401k, but really what we need to do is start looking for value in other places, in your home. I mean, if you take the money that you would have invested and instead invest in yourself, invest in your home, you know, then you're pulling money, you know, you're not going to the Wall Street casino. You're going to your own home and making your own home more valuable. And that's something that people can't take away from you.
And you talk about silver, too. I've glanced at some of your discussions there, and they're right on the mark as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, silver is nice because, you know, what a dollar is, it represents something that someone else owes you, but it's very unspecific what that is.
Correct.
But silver is actually, the silver coin itself is valuable.
Yeah. Intrinsic versus extrinsic,
exactly,
as you describe, yes.
Yeah, the value of the silver is in the silver itself. It's not somewhere else. And so you know, what I try to do is every time I have a paycheck, I use a small portion of that paycheck to go and buy a small amount of silver. And, you know, it's real easy to do. People think about precious metal investing and they're like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. But if you've got $30 to spare every month, you can buy silver.
That's right.
The coin shops, they all have they have silver bullion coins. And you go in and right now a 1 ounce silver coin, there's the spot price, which is about $20, and then dealers usually charge $3 to $5 over that.
Right.
And so for $25 you can walk out with a silver coin.
An ounce.
Yes. Right. So anyway, that's
and then you also talk in your book about looking for ways and places in which you can use silver instead of currency as your means of exchange, and I thought those were really well placed ideas.
Yeah, the problem is there's not a lot of places right now that do that, but I think that you know I've made the offer that I'll sell my book for a half ounce silver coin.
I thought that was a great place to start.
Yeah, and just if we just start doing it in our own lives, we can step around the money printing that the central bank is doing.
And you made the point that's really important for our readers or our listeners. What are we, readers, listeners, viewers? We'll get it right in a minute.
We're on the radio.
The radio. and that is that it's not the point that silver will go up. You're not trying to make that argument. You're trying to make instead the argument that silver is an intrinsic standard as opposed to the fluctuations of the dollar.
Right. Gold and silver are what we should be using as our standard to measure other things. We don't look to see if the value of our dollars are going up in our bank account, but really what we should be doing is holding silver and seeing if our dollars go up and down in value compared to our silver and not the other way around.
If a person doesn't know how to find out what the value of silver is, it's really easy to find out, isn't it? In this internet age, you can just pull it right up off of the stock market. I do it on my iPhone all the time.
Mm-hmm. The SLV stock is usually indexed pretty well to the spot price of silver.
Right.
But that's one way is to move into physical, and I call those permanent assets. Because we tend to buy cheap stuff, and I think that's one thing. I've done this myself. I grew up in a family that respected the dollar, and so you know we need to spend our money wisely. So I've always thought about let's spend money as cheaply as we can. But that's not always the answer, because you go to Walmart and you find something that's super cheap and you buy it and it breaks the next day. Being less expensive did not make my life cheaper.
There you go.
But on top of that, there's ways to get out of money at all. And that is in your community. I think we undervalue the amount of value that our communities bring to us.
Good point.
Are you suggesting barter?
That's one of the ways. But if you step back even from transactions, I've had a history of family illnesses in my family. And what's happened is I've had a great church community. And that exists across several churches.
True.
And what's happened is when my son was in the hospital, we homeschool. Okay. And so my wife is with our sick child and I have to go to work. And so we have these children who need schooling. Well, what happened is members of our community would come and watch our kids all day long for 3 months. And wow. So, there's no way to buy that.
That's right. That's value that you shouldn't dismiss or overlook.
Yeah, and you literally cannot buy it. Even if, you could offer me home care for them for 3 months, and that would not be the same thing that we received from having friends and members and family and members of our community come and help.
That's true.
That's a completely different idea. And when we say, well, what can we buy? What can the government give us in healthcare? There are things that can't be bought. And so I think by pulling back a little bit and saying, well, what if money isn't the only thing? Then we can get a better perspective.
Right.
Now you and your wife have three children. What you're emphasizing then is community. It begins with your own family and a strong family. in a community of strong families, mm-hmm. and a strong church network, or a place, a network of people that are like-minded, shared values. You couldn't go off and leave your children or have these people into your home unless you were pretty assured that they share right. your values.
Exactly.
And that your children were safe with them. And so it does speak to that community, but it's shared values, and that's very important. Probably shared faith
mm-hmm.
Makes a big, big difference in mm-hmm. order to make this kind of economy work.
Yeah.
You're talking, we've only got an hour, and there's a lot in this book. Oh, by the way, tell our listeners how they can get a copy of it.
If you go to microsecession.com, that's all one word, that's my website, and there's links there to buy the book, and there's also my blog. Right. And I try to keep it updated, one or two articles a week. Right. Some of them are practical. Some of them are about the economy. So if you go to microsecession.com, all one word, you can do all of that there.
And you publish this yourself?
Yes.
Bartlett Publishing.
Bartlett Publishing. It's actually our second book. My first one being a technical book on computer programming.
Oh, so. Multi-talented guy. I noticed... periodically or every once in a while throughout the chapters, you have a policy note. In this one on steps to money secession, you have a nice one in here, child labor.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's explain that.
Well, you know, we kind of, I think in child labor laws, I think we've kind of swung too far. You know, back in the late 1800s, there were real problems with child labor. There'd be kids who would work in the mines, and they literally wouldn't see sunlight for years of their life.
Right.
And, you know, that's a problem. But having kids that are responsible and know how to, you know, how the economy works and who can earn and work for a living, I think that's important.
I think it's critical. We can't risk raising generations without work ethic.
But what I've done with my kids is I've kind of taken the lemonade stand approach and put it on steroids. What we do is we have a family lotion business. We learn how to make lotion ourselves from beeswax and oil and water and fragrance. And so the kids make the lotions and then they sell them. And so I separated out. I calculated all the costs, and the kids get a certain amount of money because you have to put up the materials first. So we have to have an investor,
right?
And the investor gets a certain amount of the return. The person who makes it gets a certain amount of return, and the person who sells it gets a certain amount of the return. And I was really proud of my middle child because he went and he pushed a wagon full of lotion all over the neighborhood the other day, selling it to anyone who was outside.
That's great.
So
free market 101.
Exactly.
Well, you can also you give examples here. Instead of paying outside help to do the housework, you have your children do it, and mm-hmm. they can earn that money there. But I think, I mean, this is just common sense. We grew up, my family had four kids in it. We all did homework, sure. Housework around sure. that. We had chores, and you can pay a child based on it, but it should be you work to earn.
Yeah,
and that's when you begin to teach those valuable lessons.
Right.
And also just for helping the family. I mean, there's a lot of families that have, you know, they're struggling. And if their kids could work, they could, you know.
Contribute.
Yeah. I mean, a kid with a lawn mowing business, you can actually make a lot of money mowing lawns. Yeah.
I started delivering newspapers at the age of 8 and did that until I left for college. Mm-hmm. And
my son bought his car with lawnmower money.
Yeah. I bought my bicycles, my trombones, my clothes, all my dating, gas money, everything. It was my responsibility.
There's babysitting for girls and other jobs. In this day and age, they could be writing, developing websites for somebody.
That's true.
It doesn't have, or an app. Anyway. We've got some other subjects in here on micro-secession. Let's get to a couple. We've got a couple of minutes before we go to the break. Food here, other micro-secessions, seceding from the food supply, seceding from the healthcare system. That one I'd like to spend some time on in the second half.
Right.
Seceding from the education industry and protecting your community, and then we can get into those principles. But let's just real quick hit on food supply.
Well, I think, you know, in we have this category of people we call preppers. But really,
nah, I don't know any of those.
but really, if you look at the, you know, before the industrialized society, you would be really stupid to not have 3 months' supply of food on hand.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I think that even if everything were great and we had no looming disasters on the horizon, I think that having a 3-month supply would be kind of a minimum that you should do in really good times.
And it's not just because the economy might collapse. It's also because tornadoes come or hurricanes come.
Or the ice storm.
Or ice storms come, exactly.
Power outages. This is Oklahoma. Yeah, we've experienced...
Yeah. All of the above.
All of the above. And it's just a good thing to do. Learn canning.
Mm-hmm.
Canned food. Produce your own food. And put things back. All right. Well, that's the music indicating the end of the first half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden with Don White, and our special guest today is Jonathan Bartlett, author of Micro Secession. And we're going to have a short break, and we're going to ask you to stick around and come right back.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with Don White. Our guest today is Jonathan Bartlett, and that was I'll Fly Away by Avalon. I love that version.
That's just good. It's just good.
Yeah, it is. I'll Fly Away. It kind of reminds me of I'll Secede. No. I'm sorry. We will secede out of this world someday.
We will.
Jonathan, at the end of the first half, we were talking about seceding by food, and you mentioned that you'd like to go back and talk about one more point on the money. Money is like, how much are we really taxed?
Yeah, well, one thing that people don't realize is that when you buy something with money, you have to take taxes into consideration. And, you know, right now people don't realize how much they pay in tax because it's spread out. You pay a little bit in Social Security tax. You pay your employer pays some in Social Security tax, which is actually you paying it in a hidden way.
That's right.
You pay a little bit in sales tax, a little bit in state tax, a little bit in your
property tax,
mm-hmm. and then your regular federal tax. Well, it turns out I ran the numbers, and if you make $60,000 a year, you pay around 43% in taxes. So that means if you start working in January, you don't start working for yourself until May.
That's right.
And so, anyway, that's if you do things that don't involve money, you don't get taxed on them. And so the more things that you can do for yourself, if you can do your own plumbing, if you can do your own yard work, if you can grow your own food, you shouldn't think of it. If you're taxed 43%, that means that everything you buy actually costs 75% more than what it's listed as.
That's right.
So your $5 Starbucks is actually costing you about $8.
There you go.
And so if you can make, so, you know, if you've, it, rather than spending money at Starbucks, it's not $5 that you're saving, it's $8. So if you make your own coffee, that's what, 50 cents a cup. And so you're actually saving $7.50 every time you fill up your cup of coffee when you grow your own food. We raise chickens. And there's actually a story in the Tulsa World the other day about chicken raising. And
right. I saw that. And in fact, there was a story about your book in Tulsa World, or Tulsa Today.
Tulsa Today, yeah.
They did a review of the book I saw.
Tell our listeners about the text message you sent your wife. Your wife didn't know you could do this.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I didn't tell my wife that I was going to start raising chickens, and so one day when she was out, I took the boys to Outwoods to pick up some chickens, and so the only warning that she had that we were doing this is I sent her a text message that said, "Honey, I'm out cruising with the boys to pick up some chicks."
And what did you make your chicken coop out of?
Actually, it's kind of cool.
Doghouse?
No, actually, what we did is the kids have a play set in the backyard, and so. We just put a chicken wire around it and added a door.
Right.
And so there's just a little chicken coop in our backyard, and the kids can still play on the top of the playset, and the chickens are underneath.
And you live in the city.
Yeah, I live, you know, it's suburbs, but yeah.
And so there's a restriction on how many chickens you can own, or a limit.
Yeah, the article in Tulsa World said that there wasn't any limit in Broken Arrow, but I was pretty sure that there was a limit of four, so I'm not sure.
In Tulsa, it's six.
Yeah.
No roosters.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. And if you did have roosters, your neighbors might kill you anyway.
Have you benefited from having these chickens?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're great. They're great pets. I mean, think about this. You could have a dog, and the dog eats food. Okay? Dog's fun to play with. Or you can have chickens, and the chickens make food, and they're fun to play with.
Are you getting eggs?
Lots of them.
Lots of eggs.
Yeah, basically, your chickens, if they're a good layer, they'll lay an egg every day. So, except for a few winter months.
So you get the let's say the entertainment value of them, and that's something that was lost on me as a child, but I'm beginning to appreciate and understand now.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun to play with.
Yeah.
Well, applaud you on that. I have a home garden, and I'm working on that kind of thing, and I'm already making pickles, and I'm canning on that. I haven't quite moved into the chicken phase yet, but I'm thinking about it.
They're easy. Chickens are really easy. We don't even have a wall on our coop, and they survive the winter just fine.
That is amazing.
Yeah, they're very hardy creatures.
All right. Well, let's get on from chicken coops to, I love this part, seceding from the healthcare system. Yay. All right. This is what I want to do. I've been working on getting healthier, so I don't even need to that because I'm convinced doctors make you sick. And that's even knowing some good ones. And try to avoid actually needing or engaging in this system. You know, we have a website, exposinghealthcarereform.com. Healthcare reform has nothing to do with making sick people well, but it does have to do with a mammoth information sharing technology system that is going to be a tremendous expense from here on out, and the end of privacy. So when you get, I'd say it's getting naked for the state now when you go to the doctor, because everything about you is known eventually by the state, even though they say it's been, the magic word is encrypted and de-identified, but it's about you, dude. So give us your pointers on seceding from the healthcare system.
Well, I like what you said about, you know, whether or not it's about making sick people well, because I think that's important. What they're starting to do is simply manage sickness.
That's and, good point.
And the that's also the way they're paid, too. You know, there's a lot of money that goes into diabetes management. Not diabetes cures, but just the ins and outs, the daily management of a bunch of diseases. Now, I don't have any information on whether or not, you know, people are trying to perpetuate this, but that's, you know, that's the end result, is that we're doing a lot of just, you know, look at the symptoms, not about making sick people well. Now, there are several things. You know, first of all, I think that one thing that we can do just as a policy idea is to increase the number of people who are allowed to give care. One of the problems is that the only people who are really allowed to distribute care right now are people who have been in school for a bazillion years, and that costs a lot of money to do
and took a lot of loans to get there.
What most people need, and this is what we usually use healthcare for, as a, you know, as a father of boys, you know, usually it's going to the doctor and say, do you see this? Will this kill them? I mean, that's mostly what we need to know, is whether or not what they, not, we don't really need it treated. We just need to know if it's, you know, is this life threatening? Are they going to be maimed permanently? Or can we just go home and leave it to rest? But doctors always want to do something. But if we could, you know, just have a nurse who's trained to look at something, this does not take a lot of training to do, but trained to look at something and just say, yes, you need to see someone, or no, you're going to be fine. That's really, you know, that would cut out probably about, I'd say, you know, at least 25% of the cost of raising kids healthily. And so that's kind of a basic policy point. Now, as individuals, one thing that we can do is we can just choose healthier things every day. I'm working on this myself. I'm not there yet. That's one thing about the book is don't expect me to be a super guru, you know, having done everything. I wrote this book as this is what I'm doing. Would you all like to come with me and do it with me? But, you know, one thing is, instead of having a pop, have a tea. Tea is great for you. In fact, I actually can do tea out of my own garden. You don't have to have actual tea leaves. Just most herbs work as teas. You can get spearmint, which is great. And it grows like mad.
It does.
Put it in a pot. Otherwise, it takes out. It's an invasive.
Yeah. Well, I actually
thing,
like
but it. But it's really good.
I like invasive things because otherwise my garden's full of grass. So I'm actually just trying to find invasive plants that will outperform my grass. So,
kind of unusual.
I like that.
So,
good way to look at it.
Yeah. So, you know, if you replace your 200 calorie Coke with a zero calorie tea, the tea not only isn't hurting you, it's actually helping you slightly.
Right.
And there's a lot of places in our lives with money, with food, with our entertainment, where we can switch out things that are hurting us with things that help us slightly. And, you know, each of them may not be a dramatic change, but if, you know, being wise is doing the right thing, lots of small good decisions over a long period of time.
That's good philosophy. They may not be earth-shattering in and of themselves, but they contribute.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, drinking tea is not going to, you're not going to drink a glass of tea today and be fit tomorrow.
To help our listeners understand a little bit more about the true cost of health care and why it's gotten to where it is now, we've talked about this on some other recent shows, but your perspective is right in line with the guy that we had on just a couple weeks ago.
Dr. Keith Smith,
representing the surgery center down in Oklahoma City.
Well, my perspective is that the insurance is actually causing health care to be more expensive. For a number of reasons, but the most important one is that it causes consumers to not think about what something costs.
Exactly.
If
hides it.
Yeah, and so you're like, why shouldn't I get the highest cost thing? You know, if
it's free,
exactly. if it's free, why shouldn't I do it? I mean, that's the rational thing to do. If something's free, get the best one.
Except they aren't free. That's the key.
Yeah, it winds up, if you wonder why your healthcare goes up 20% every year, it's because over and over and over, people make the decision, well, I want the better thing. And that's totally understandable, but that's because you don't have to pay for it. The other thing is that the billing is just confused. All the health insurance companies bill different ways. And so, all the health insurance companies pay bills in different ways. And so the hospitals and doctor's offices, they basically throw the kitchen sink at the, insurance and just see what they'll pay.
That's true.
And
they have drastically inflated price schedules that they do that from to begin with.
Yeah. And so if you don't have insurance, then you haven't negotiated a way to pay them. You know, there's no way. Usually, if you have a negotiated rate with someone on anything, it doesn't matter what it is, it's usually a 20% discount.
At least, yeah, I mean, agree.
I mean, that's usually about what it is. But in insurance, negotiated rates are usually 50% discounts.
That's right.
And so that tells you that there's something odd going on. I don't think it's collusion. I think it's just really bad management.
Well, it could be collusion.
It could be collusion.
It could be that they've come to this agreement on this. Now, you have an estimate in here of how much it really costs, even if your employer is offering insurance and you're paying a portion or a copay.
Right.
It's $15,000 a year.
That's pretty average. That's right. Usually, because like I pay $100 a month for insurance, but that's... We forget that when you're at a job, everything that your employer, quote unquote, your employer pays for, you're actually paying for, because your employer has a certain amount of money to work with to hire you. You have to make that money back for them for you to be worth hiring. And so all of your benefits that look like they're free are actually there. You're actually paying for them. You just don't get to see the money. You don't have the choice not to pay for them. Right. So they're not actually benefits. They're actually liabilities.
That's true.
And so what you have to look at is not what your out-of-pocket cost is, because that's complete bull. Right. You have to look at what your employer is paying, because that's how much work you have to do to get that.
That's a really good description, and it's so often missed.
It is. Now, the estimate, let's say it's $15,000 a year true cost,
mm-hmm.
Which includes your labor and your portion.
Mm-hmm.
Then the estimate, if the Unaffordable Care Act is fully implemented, is $20,000 plus mm-hmm. per year on a typical family,
right.
Which is prohibitively expensive. And so if the option is there to not have insurance at all, you could be saving that money toward your medical crises
mm-hmm.
yourselves and have benefit of the income.
Yeah, if you think about this, I think it was the person that you interviewed, their costs were about a quarter to a fifth of what the hospital was charging.
One-sixth is the kind of number we kept hearing.
Yeah, and so if you imagine if you took the $10,000, you know, or $20,000, as you said, $20,000 a month, and you save that...
A year.
Yeah. And you save that, you know, it would not be hard to cover a fifth of what you know, things normally
exactly.
cost.
So if you have what is now a catastrophic illness at $250,000, it would put you out of business. The truth is that that's probably a $30,000 or $40,000 cost item, and you could pay for it in 2 years worth of savings.
Exactly.
I mean, those are the kinds of numbers that I think are real.
And think about, you know, even if you, let's say you didn't have that much saved, but if your neighbor had $10,000 a year extra cash, the amount that you can help each other out with is just astounding.
That's right.
We're scraping by. In fact, you know, a lot of people think that Americans spend a lot of money. But actually, that's not true. They've done studies on this. And as far as disposable income and how much we're actually spending, we're actually spending less on all of the amenities than we have been ever. And I wouldn't say ever, but since like the 50s.
Because the cost of living has gone up so much.
The cost of living has gone up. We're choosing, we're actually doing a good job in choosing not to indulge ourselves. But the cost of living has gone up so much that even with that, we're strapped.
Right, right.
One thing the government uses an excuse to go after, saying why they need to be involved in this health care and make sure everybody's covered with insurance and cover a broader group of people, including young people who are not likely to be making claims anyway because they're naturally healthier in general. I think part of this is to offset the coming expenses of the aging baby boomers who are going
That's
to
right.
be enrolled into Medicare
right.
And using the health system, as they call it, more frequently because there's millions of us.
Sure.
And so the anticipation of this...
10,000 a day.
They're looking at how can we offset this coming payout, the risk to the insurance right. companies, and of course it benefits them. By having more and more people enrolled in insurance, so we have this de facto crisis.
Right.
Well, who they're trying to find and identify, and I'm going to be politically incorrect here because it's shorter, is the fat diabetic smokers, because that is
with guns.
With guns. With guns. And veterans who know how to shoot. But it's fat diabetic smokers who are the most frequent users or consumers now. They're consumers of the healthcare system. So in your book, you're talking about getting started in the holistic care. And there's a truism in here. It's a common dictum is this. If it came from a plant, eat it. If it was made in a plant, don't eat it. And you go on here about the benefits of herbal remedies. Not that you're advocating that, but it works in many cases. And our pharmaceutical companies are frequently users. In fact, most of their pharmaceuticals originally started with something that was natural that they've twisted and modified. And you talk in here about something as ubiquitous as dandelions actually being a beneficial remedy in a mm-hmm. lot of cases. So, you know, I'm with you. I take it that your belief is that the Lord made this earth. Everything that's in it can be used in one manner or another. And we came out of the earth. And there are things that we can do that are natural, organic, and real that will benefit and let your body heal itself.
Exactly. I mean, God made our bodies, and He made them to regenerate to some degree.
Right.
And so, you know, and He made the plants for us to eat. And so, you know, all we're doing is trying to restore the balance that was there. We're helping our body, 'cause, you know, There is a cure for pretty much every disease known to man, and that's your immune system. And so by supporting that, you can help yourself. You know, that it's not going to, you know, this is an instant, and it's not, you know.
It's a process.
It's a process, and there's some people where it doesn't, they have structural problems
sure.
where it doesn't work. You have to do something invasive.
Right.
You know, I'm not here to say that there's not a place for surgery and heavy drugs and stuff like that. But we've started using them as the default.
Good point.
That we've started there. And we really need to use those as the last resort.
Right.
I
was just going to say, before we run out of time, and I hate to do this, but we are close to running out of time. I want to talk about education,
too. Oh, yes. Let's get to that. Seceding from the education.
Can we just jump from healthcare over to education for a couple of minutes and talk to our listeners about ways to liberate yourself from the education malaise?
Yeah, well, I, you know, the as with most things, you kind of get away from the government system. And the way that we do that is homeschooling. I love homeschooling. Not, you know, there's the argument that homeschoolers learn more. And I'm not against that. I think that's probably true, but that's not why we homeschool. We homeschool because I believe that it is our job as parents to communicate our values to our children. And, you know, I actually would be okay with our children even learning less if they turned out to be good people. I'm not concerned as much with the amount of knowledge they have as the fact that when they grew up, that they'll follow the Lord and that they will and that they will treat their neighbor as they treat themselves. That's what I'm concerned about.
Yep, it's critical to the notion that our founders had that the form of government we established here is only appropriate for a moral and virtuous people and totally inappropriate to any other. And if you haven't accomplished that or contributed to that as parents, then we've really let the child down.
Yeah, and the my public education, I went to a very good public school, but I realized that there were systematic things that were missing from my education. I realized one day when I was about 30 that I never asked the question, what is God doing in history? And that's something they don't tell you in history class, not to ask what God's doing in history. It's just you're so practiced at not bringing God into the equation.
That's right.
And you don't ask, you know, what was God's plan for the animals? You look at the taxonomy. I'm a big fan of taxonomy. I think it's great because you can see in it God's plan for organisms.
Right.
But we don't teach it that way. We don't investigate whether there is any plan. We assume that there's not one and go forward.
Right.
And so there's all these subjects where you can go so much deeper if you ask good questions, but they kind of train you by example not to ask them.
You and Don were having a conversation before we started the show on this issue. And tell our listeners that.
Yeah. Well,
your experience with some of your colleagues.
Yeah. I really think that, the homeschool movement and a lot of these other things, God is calling us as a generation to do these things. And I realized this because a bunch of my friends grew up together in church. And we went to an evangelical church. But after we graduated, we all split and went our separate ways to different states. We moved apart. We didn't talk to each other at all. Me and my wife, we started homeschooling. And we decided to base our lives and be much more natural, much more separated from the government and that sort of thing. And when we moved back to Tulsa, my wife doing homeschooling, she got together with other homeschooling people, which one day I found out was all of my old youth group.
Who had also come back.
They had all independently moved away, decided that homeschooling was the best option for them and their family, and eventually moved back to Tulsa. And then we're all just homeschooling together. And I just thought it was interesting that the only thing that because we all thought homeschoolers were weird. We thought they were very strange people, and why would anyone want to homeschool their children? And that was our thought, and that was our thought all the way through high school. But the fact that we separated, and the only thing in common was the fact that we had Christ as our focus. That when we came back, we were all homeschooling.
That's fascinating, isn't it? I love that story.
One more time, how can people get your book?
It's at microsecession.com, and you can also go to Amazon and look up microsecession.
Yeah, that's easy to find on Amazon too. Right?
You just have to remember to keep it all as one word.
That's right.
And then, but microsecession.com has a lot of other articles. I try to keep it up to date, news on what's happening, and just also practical things that you can do.
Yeah, the blog site is rich with good information and good human interest or life story materials too.
Yeah.
Well, I think people will be able to relate, and I really appreciate the style of writing that you've got. This book's only 120 pages long, but I think it's going to be a classic and a good prototype, a beginning point for a lot of people. I enjoyed reading it. We've got an action item, Don, for our listeners. And if you've been a regular listener, you know we don't like to just talk, but you've got an action item. There's a current piece of legislation that's still active. It's dormant, but we're between sessions, and it could show up again in 2014. It's Senate Bill 254. That's 254. And what this does, this bill authorizes the Oklahoma Health Care Authority to verify a recipient's income, we're talking Sooner Care and Medicaid, here, income not only through the Oklahoma Tax Commission, but through the Internal Revenue Service.
A linkage we don't want.
No, because that's part of the federal exchange and exactly. The data hub. You do exactly. Not want them to do that. That's the right. Authors are Kim David and Doug Cox. We're asking people to call the House and the Senate. Toll-free numbers, House 800-522-8502. Again, that's the House is Oak 800-522-8502. The Senate is 1-800-865-6490. This is state legislation. That's the state legislature. This has been a full hour.
It's a great show.
Jonathan, though. We're going to have you back again.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate you having me.
Well, I'm glad you found
it.
Glad we crossed paths here. That's the music indicating the end of this hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. We thank you for listening, and may God bless you.